what we're going to do now is we're going to provide an exemplar of ingenuity again, in that we're actually going to have the full presentation posted by Lou Reich from Goddard's Space Flight Center and Computer Sciences Corporation. Lou is going to join us.
I have joined, I believe.
Through the audio feed. And what we'll do, Lou, is you have 20 minutes. And what we'll do is the key piece of this is simply to serve as an introduction to this NASA-supported research. And that what we'll do is we will provide this as a resource continuing on the web for not just you all and the attendees here, but to the web audience that's involved in this. So with that, Lou, you talk your presentation, and we will appropriately move the slides.
Okay. Well, I'm going to skip through this, as would be expected. I apologize. I actually had my first disk crash. And so this is scattered. But it looks good. If you start at slide 3.
There you go. In the beginning.
In the beginning, at least the beginning of this, there was the OAIS reference model, which I've tried very hard to put into one page. I don't know how many people there have heard of it, but it was a reference model done by a vast collaborative effort of libraries and science data centers and arts people and libraries. So these set up the reference model to look at long-term preservation. The whole OAS reference model and a summary of the OAIS reference model are posted in the external references section, so I'm not going to try to go over this. This reference model is being used in nearly every effort of long-term preservation that I know of. Now, I'm sure that I've heard of some that I don't know of. Okay, what this presentation is actually about is starts on page 5, which is one of the things is that if you notice in the OAIS reference model, there's a vast need for information packages, both to submit information, to distribute it, and eventually to store it. Therefore, CCSDS, who is the same organization that initially did the OAIS reference model, wanted to do a packaging standard to implement basically the information model of the OAIS. We also wanted it to be useful in transferring objects, so we did not merely put in long-term preservation. We actually, in this research, have been looking at how would we actually accomplish things for the scales of data we're talking about. So basically, this is an older slide, but it's still what were our really driving factors. The conceptual view, which is slide 6, basically is any package interchange file where you have a manifest document, and it can contain both files and also can point to external files. Those files can be metadata, data. They can be in a registry as long as they're accessible. However, the major view is how do you turn this 30,000 file collection into one central object for metadata and control. Slide 7 is a more detailed view. I'm not going to go over it in any detail except to point out that this is really the manifest and the XFDU standard, which should come out any day now. is also supplied in a draft form on the external references page.
Lou?
Yes.
This is Mark Conrad out at Rocket Center.
Yeah.
Your slides just came up. We haven't been seeing your slides.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay.
Lou, you're fine here.
Christine. Okay. We're now on page 7. The most interesting thing we found, and this was found in conjunction with Don Sawyer, who was working on a form, a much more complete form for a submission information package, and how the producer and the archive would interact to both define these and check them, is we had initially thought that just using the metadata model used in the OAIS reference model, which basically had representation data, provenance data, and data descriptions would be enough. However, we quickly, when we were checking things with various potential customers, discovered that even the most current of them really used other or any more than anything else, that to do a formal mapping into the OAIS reference model would be a major task. There are various and sundry formal models, but what we did was basically support an extensible model. We do that by attaching attributes and then using them to classify data and allow people to subclass their own through another API. Okay, what we did was, while we were trying to develop the standard, we developed a toolkit library to prove that it was conceivable to use this standard to actually describe what we wanted to do. That toolkit, I will send out a URL to anyone who wants to get it, and it's open source. Right now you can get the binary with nothing other than knowing the location. If you want the source, you just have to contact me and agree to give us the results that you derive from it. Okay. Basically, this research has been going on for a couple years now under a NARA, NASA MOU, for which we have been basically doing most of the actual implementation and testing using the NARA task. So the first thing we did was, when we did this in XML schema, because I had drunk the Kool-Aid and actually believed that those validation mechanisms were easy to use. We quickly found out that they weren't really easy to use, and therefore we started to look at some different ways of incorporating other validation functionality within the XFDU toolkit so people could load plugins. And of special interest was the fact that we tried Schematron, and we'll go into that briefly, but we also allow now each object contained to have its own XML schema, any namespace or anything, and if we have access to it, if the toolkit has access to it, it will validate it. And there's a flag, so you can either get that validation, which does cost something, or not. Okay, and the next slide is a quick overview.
Which slide are you on, Lou?
I'm sorry, 11. Harder when I'm not there. was a quick of how we designed it. Basically, we took a Sun product and a SACS validator and used them to basically stream the objects, and if we had a ability to validate them, we did. Now, we were quite terrified that this was going to take forever, especially given our experiences with Schematron. And we did this in 2006, I guess, using some JPL data that we were using. And we got preliminary results, which you can see on page 12 as to what we did. On 13, we realized that, gee, it looked good, but we had to see if it was scalable. So we artificially extended the number of objects and the size of the objects. And since we were doing scalability testing, we also did one for Schematron. You'll see why I'm sort of ignoring Schematron on slide 14, which is the validation time with the XSD for these objects was actually quite small and appeared to scale fine. In fact, as you notice, for these 1.8 kilobyte data description, data objects, the time kept going down because we kept using up the initial startup time. So at 4,888, we had not yet reached that limit. In Schematron, however, as you can see, the time started to scale and lose scalability. And this is a good example test of how of a lot of things we see, which is as you get, these are very small limits. Of course, Schematron has probably improved its capabilities. We haven't gone back and retested them. The next slide, which is slide 15, shows when we try to apply this for massive scalability. What we basically did is we used the same objects, and we would use multiple versions of them. And so we have total file size of each object going from 1.86 kilobytes, which was original test, up to 458 kilobytes. And then we had the number starting at the high limit of our first test and going up to 10,000, up to 100,000. Realize we were just looking at scalability here. We were not attempting to optimize anything. We just used the same thing. And on page 16, you'll see that actually I have many graphs to show this, but I couldn't put them back together enough. I will post an improved presentation on the website. I believe we get a chance to do that after the meeting.
Absolutely, yes.
But in fact, when I did graphs on both the columns and the rows, all of them scaled extremely well. In fact, again, they showed a little improvement as you got higher. However, when you get up to half a megabyte objects and 10,000 and 100,000 of them, you're starting to talk about a 5 gigabyte file, and that takes a while. I wouldn't think anyone would want to use that in that sort of size range, but you can. Slide 17 I sent Susan a replacement for, but I doubt if we're going to be able to deal with it. So I'll just go to slide 18, which starts to show the other things we've done. We wanted to see how this technique worked for objects that were in both the ERA level sizes and also in the science data set sizes that we were expecting using the planetary data system as a test bed and as information source. Unfortunately, slide 17 was the PDS ones. And actually, what we ended up doing was using the PDS, looking at the size of the total collection. Since the science files were very large, we got up to 50 gigabytes very quickly. And we used the SEC data, which was supplied by Mark Conrad, in fact, from the NARA office and the ERA prototype. And we ran these tests. Again, I don't want anyone to get eye strained. So what we did was, the first thing we noticed was that when we were creating things, that it was linear up to 100,000 objects. But when we tried to create another 50,000 objects, it include another 50,000 objects. It clearly became a scaling issue. And that can be seen on slide 20 in the actual reports and in the eventual slide set that you'll get. There are going to be lots of these graphs as an attempt to look at scalability, and this shows it very well. Now, what changed the scalability was simply the amount of core available. We started running out of name tables and things at what became the scalability point. Okay, if you go back to slide 18 for a second, you'll see that we tried to be complete in that, in the outlying sections. We've included both the first result and the result when we increased it, the core size, the memory size, sorry, VM memory size. Then I knew I was in a hurry. So this is, the slide 21 is really our first set of results. We had to go from a 32-bit architecture to a 64-bit architecture, and we discovered several problems. The biggest single problem was in Java Zip. They hadn't bothered to upgrade to anything that would have enough files, and it's described in detail, but basically it had been a bug for 45 years at that point, and I'm still not sure if it's solved, but I think this is one of the problems that we're going to run into, is that I realized that during the last presentation we were talking about people who were going to solve the 100-year preservation problem, vendors. Well, I'm involved in a European effort, which is a preservation effort that I'm basically being an external observer to. And IBM has done for them a storage system that will actually very closely model both the OAIS and the packaging information model. However, they can't find enough customers to actually make this a very profitable system for them to release generally. And I think that that's one of the things. Those people who see the need for, I'll say 20-year storage, because I think that's what I think the level is, that you'll see so many changes in all your architecture, maybe 5-year storage. They have to get out and not necessarily sponsor research as much as make people understand that they would be eager to participate and buy a commercial product in that frame. The last slide is based on, or the last slide or the second last slide? Second last slide, 22, is based on, as you see in the previous slide, we hadn't done any testing in a non-single server environment. And we knew that that was unrealistic, and we really wanted to get in an environment where, A, it was a federated grid-type environment, and B, we could get access to many more NARA data sets, ERA prototype data sets, so we could test this on various data types. One of the things we realized and discovered was true is based on the type of data, whether it's all binary or mainly text, you're going to get a lot of different results in compression and in quickness and often surprise results. So in the last round of testing, we tried to integrate into the Hawn server, which I don't know if Mike Smorrell is there, but it's another NARA-sponsored research effort. It's a producer archive workflow network, which is looking specifically at submission and eventual archiving of large collections of data in a gridded environment. And it looked very much like it took us about less than a man week to integrate the XFDU toolkit library into PAWN. And that's another section of the presentation that I'll include in the next version. And we ran their image test set, which I think was about 400 megabytes or so. And we had no problem. And we spent a lot of time documenting that and how well PAWN had documented their interfaces and the fact that this was what we needed because we were able to extend their ability to export their packages into XFDUs. And, however, when we got up about over about 7 gigabytes, and in a client-server mode we were using and the network, we kept discovering new problems, be they network timeouts, be they lack of anticipation and program problems that we ran out of file names. And each of these problems were solvable, probably other than the fact that we needed to be on a better network, and we're still working on this issue as of when the research report was done. It's current research that's going on now. However, I think that the current issue, or that I have, is very similar to the one that was mentioned in the past product. I think we're seeing just an unbelievable large requirements drift as users are becoming accustomed to their 1 terabyte removable storage on their machines. And, for example, we have been, again, Don Sawyer can speak more to this than I can, but we've had a ongoing test bed based on the fact that the planetary data system at JPL was going to use the National Space Science Data Center at Goddard as a permanent archive. And less than a year ago, the requirement of the maximum volume, this isn't a single object, but the maximum volume was 50 gigabytes, and that's why we tested up to it at that point. Well, the newest requirement is many terabytes, and that drift has happened in less than a year. And so I think that, I mean, one of the things is we have to now look at the problem again, because solutions, perhaps like packaging, certainly like packaging everything together physically, is becoming less likely to work. And this, again, looking at these issues of now having, you know, terabytes, which are bigger than many storage units, such as largest tapes, brings up a whole new dimension. And I think that's it.
Thank you, Lou. Thank you for your grace and your ingenuity wherever you are.